Welcome to Intelligent Edge Yoga, yoga conversations for smart, compassionate practice with Catherine Ann Flynn. I'm Catherine. Hi, yogis. Thank you for the abundance of generosity in your time to respond to my questions about cannabis and yoga. You got back to me on various platforms with various opinions and some really interesting insights that I'm going to share today on the podcast. I think this is a really critical conversation to have, and I think it's one that perhaps a lot of yogis like me don't necessarily want to have because we want to distance ourselves from anything that we want to make sure people do not associate us with. And I think I was clear in my communication on social media, doing this for research, not in the works. As far as I can currently perceive, I will never be doing yoga and cannabis events. But for those of you who are interested in going to cannabis and yoga events or hosting them, this really is for you, just to shed some light on the conversation and what I would be concerned about if I were going to attend or facilitate an event like that. There was a sentiment that people would educate themselves before they participated in an event like this. And I don't know that that's the case. And I also feel that it's one thing if you're going to host a party and people partake in marijuana and then a yoga session breaks out. I think that's one thing. But if you are going to advertise events where you are the facilitator of yoga and there are cannabis products being consumed, it is absolutely your responsibility to educate your community as much as possible on the risks and the safety measures in place so that they can make an informed choice, which is their responsibility. It's a call to remember that calling yourself a teacher means you are an educator. Now, many of the things that I reference in today's podcast will be linked in the show notes at www.intelligentedge.yoga. So if you'd like to go look for where I got some of my information from, there will be a long list of resources for you there. The reason this is of interest is that Canada, where I live, is legalizing marijuana this October. If you go to Canada.ca and go to the government website about cannabis legalization, there's a big black bar that still says cannabis is not legal yet, just to be clear. Marijuana is legal in 39 states and CBD is legal across the country. Just because Canada is set for legalization doesn't mean that it's just that simple to start a yoga and cannabis event. These things are regulated province by province. And in Ontario, it's going to be a subsidiary of the Liquor Control Board of Ontario regulating marijuana. And if you check the government website, currently it says that it will be users 19 years of age and older. And you will only be able to use recreational cannabis in a private residence, including the outdoor space of a home, your unit or your balcony, although it depends on your building's lease agreement, and you will not be allowed to use recreational cannabis in any public place, workplaces, or motorized vehicles. I'm not sure where yoga studios fall into that, but it's not looking promising. You should also know that the insurance company associated with Yoga Alliance in Canada, Gallagher Insurance, will not insure you for any event where alcohol or marijuana is consumed. So if you're doing a yoga and wine retreat or a vino and vinyasa or a cannabis-infused event, the insurance that you purchase through them does not cover you. So before we think about what we might do in a yoga class with this stuff, we should probably think about the stuff that we are talking about. So there's not just a difference in marijuana strains, but there's also a difference in the products that you can make with those strains. There are two main products that we're looking at. One is a CBD oil or a CBD product. CBD stands for cannabidiol, which is a component of marijuana that has little, if any, intoxicating properties. So the psychoactive components of the drugs, the part that gets you high, it doesn't contain any of that. And CBD products, I previously mentioned, when derived from the hemp plant, not the marijuana plant, are legal across the United States. And it's been used to treat anxiety and depression and seizures. I think I even read acne somewhere in there. Whereas comparatively, marijuana itself has more than 100 active components that'll get you high. And the main stuff in there is THC, which stands for tetrahydrocannabinol. Did I make that sound cool? I'm feeling better about my Sanskrit pronunciation right now. So CBD is the stuff that helps manage anxiety and pain. And there's research that shows that people are less likely to take opioids, which are a dramatic issue in both the United States and Canada. And THC is the stuff that gets you high. The fastest way for these compounds to mingle with your bloodstream is through a gas exchange that occurs in the lungs when you smoke them. But you could eat them too, and you can even use cannabis topicals. In Ayurveda, we view the skin as part of the digestive system, and topical creams or butters have long been used to ingest therapies. For example, some people use magnesium cream for muscle relaxants after intense workouts. But even all the oils that we might use for our daily Abhyanga practice, those are infused with herbs and spices that are tonifying for our systems. Once the compound hits the brain, certain senses are enhanced and other skills are dulled. From the philosophical position, pretty much all drugs are rajasic to begin with and then tamasic ultimately. For those of you who are not so up on yoga philosophy, we have three governing energies, which aren't bad, they just are. They have challenging components and they have rewarding components. They are rajas, tamas, and sattva. And so something that's rajasic is upward moving and kinetic and fiery, and something that is tamasic is downward moving and dull and potentially lethargic. Sattva is blissfulness. Sattva is bliss. But there is something beyond sattva. Sattva is not the enlightenment state. But that's for another conversation. So drugs are rajasic. They motivate you. They make you hyper. They make you extroverted. But then they bring you down, down, down. And overall, marijuana use is tamasic. So it results in a tamasic life if we use marijuana consistently. Back to the physiological effects. They do differ between individuals, obviously, but it's difficult to find definitive information on why it impacts us differently. But there's obviously a connection between the kind of pot you're using and the effects. Brain chemistry hugely influences reception of the psychoactive components of marijuana. Those of us who are vata dominant, who are composed of a lot of air and space, vata dominant people are already very dry. And marijuana has the guna, the quality of being very drying. So we have a system called the endocannabinoid system, which was discovered thanks to pot research in the 60s. Drugs like marijuana act on naturally occurring receptors in the brain called cannabinoid receptors. Where we currently understand the nervous system to generally dictate outward, the endocannabinoid system sort of pumps the brakes on signals from the nervous system, diminishing the quantity of neurotransmitters released. So when you ingest marijuana, the cannabinoid receptors throughout the brain and body are influenced by THC and stop regulating the systems they typically regulate. Your hippocampus, or hippocampi, because there's actually two, is a portion of the brain critical to the formation, organization, and storage of new memories, as well as connecting certain sensations and emotions to these memories. Under the influence of THC, your hippocampus activity is dulled, so you're not making memories well or accessing memories easily. You can see how this leads to the forgetful stoner stereotype, but also how this could be useful for people with specific memories, lives, or experiences, causing them a lot of anguish. THC affects your cerebellum and basal ganglia. This makes you a tad clumsy. The cerebellum, which is Latin for little brain, is responsible for a number of functions, including motor skills such as balance, coordination, and posture. And the basal ganglia are responsible for voluntary motor control, procedural learning, and eye movement, as well as cognitive and emotional functions, as well as motivation, which is really fascinating because my experience with marijuana consumption was not a motivating response. I definitely did not want to go do any vinyasa. Fascinating. Low levels of the neurotransmitter dopamine are tied to low motivation. So research has previously shown that the younger you are when you begin to use marijuana, the more likely you are to have lower dopamine levels and qualify for a diagnostic of marijuana addiction. Dopamine deficiency is also characterized very differently within context because it can be caused by a number of things, including Parkinson's. But some reasons that someone may medicinally apply marijuana do include pain control. It can't work in the same way that anesthetic does, obviously, but it is quite effective for chronic pain and it's safer than opiates. It's impossible to overdose, even if you have a very bad trip. You would have to smoke hundreds of joints, I read, to actually start to approach overdosing. And it's much less addictive than opiates. It doesn't have the damage to the intestinal tract that over-the-counter products like Advil or Aleve may have, which render them dangerous for people with kidney damage or ulcers. Marijuana appears to ease the pain of multiple sclerosis, nerve pain in general, act as a powerful muscle relaxant, and people swear by its ability to lessen tremors and Parkinson's disease. It's used successfully for fibromyalgia, endometriosis, interstitial cystitis, Crohn's disease, and pain and wasting syndrome caused by HIV, IBS, and other conditions that share chronic pain as their outcome. Marijuana is also used for nausea and weight loss management in cancer patients and can also be used to treat glaucoma, which is why it was initially licensed for medicinal use in California. A highly promising area of research is in its use for PTSD in veterans, and anecdotal evidence is overwhelmingly in favor of making medical marijuana more available to U.S. vets. I did say this episode was not about being for or against marijuana, but I did want to reiterate that likely any potently healing possibility, it can be potently damaging. So I felt it was worth listing all of the things that it can do extreme good for, because if it can intervene on some very serious diseases, then it is powerful, which means we need to proceed with caution. One of the reasons that I don't enjoy using marijuana is that when I have experimented with it, I am very susceptible to the feelings of paranoia that accompany a high. The reason that we get paranoid is because of the influence on the endocannabinoid system. A study published in the Journal of Neuroscience in 2011 suggests that the THC in marijuana encourages the brain to jump to scary conclusions about places and events and see patterns and connections that don't really exist. The high we experience is from a release of dopamine, but the release of dopamine is also linked to the paranoia. And this really depends on the person. A few of you sent me messages about the differences between different types of marijuana. So apparently there are three species, sativa, indica, and ruderalis. So the sativa plant is different from the indica plant in that it causes more of a euphoric high. Apparently the effects include making you sociable and cheerful and alert. Whereas the indica plant is more of a mellow high, and it will make you relaxed and sleepy and carefree and calm. I'm not sure that I can speak to experience in the differences of these strains, but I had to look them up after a friend sent me a message about yindica. And this was a large response from you, which was, if you were going to do a yoga class, it would probably be more to the yin restorative mellow vibe. And overwhelmingly, the response that I received from students was that they would be interested in CBD events, but not necessarily THC events. And next to no interest was reflected in THC events and vinyasa or movement-oriented yoga. You were also very clear that you were looking for someone who was a skillful, experienced facilitator. This is new territory. Experienced at facilitating cannabis-infused events is unlikely, although I'm well aware that there are people who have been doing this under the radar. Similarly, will facilitators be looking for experience from their students? Whenever you teach a drop-in yoga class, even pre-registered yoga classes, you are trying to facilitate an experience that hews to the middle, that to the best of your ability brings along all the beginners in the room and offers something for the advanced practitioners. This is difficult in a movement and meditation practice. I cannot imagine adding the difficulty of the influence of marijuana on top of that. What if someone gets really paranoid? What if someone has too much to smoke? I can't imagine that you would do an edibles class because edibles can take hours to come into effect. So I imagine you're doing some kind of smoking, which is going to have to be done out of doors because you can't smoke inside public places. So you're going to have to think about organizing that component. What if people freak out? What's your contingency plan? And is everyone taking an Uber home? Because it's extremely illegal to drive under the influence, no matter how legal it is this October. So do they have experience? And are you providing it to them? Which I'm not sure you'll be able to do. You'll need to look into that. You can't dispense because that's going to be regulated by government here. So are you going to have people coordinate to purchase and then bring that to your event? Historically, the LCBO had applications that you could fill out for when you were hosting an event where there were public invitations. So say you were hosting a vino and vinyasa, you should have been acquiring a permit to have alcohol at that event. And it's a relatively cheap fee. But you're going to need to find out if they're doing something similar for marijuana. This reminds me of a training that I found online while I was conducting research for this episode. It's a training where you learn to facilitate cannabis-infused events, except if you read the course description, it doesn't appear to cover any of these topics. And instead, it's an alignment-based marijuana yoga teacher training. And considering your motor control and coordination is decreased on marijuana, I don't know that alignment is our greatest concern. I think more than anything, it speaks to the trend to describe everything as alignment informed. I also confirmed with Yoga Alliance, and they said that so long as a training complies with the laws of the state or province, I assume, in this case, you can have Yoga Alliance certified marijuana yoga teacher trainings. So for those of us who are incredibly frustrated with Yoga Alliance, there's another fact to add to the consideration. I mentioned that I heard from quite a few of you, and so I clipped out some of the responses that I thought were worth sharing. This one is from a yoga teacher. I have been a marijuana and yoga practitioner for years, and when I started practicing, I basically would only practice high. From my experience, it is a very elevated way to practice. I find the heightened senses makes everything feel better, makes everything feel easier. Easier to be in the flow or moment-to-moment awareness. Now I always practice sober because I do think it's more challenging to be sober, and really I think that's the state we need to be in to do the real work. This is from another yoga teacher. This is very troubling, and I fear will end up being another thing yoga will have to push back against. Yoga fights for legitimacy every day, and this won't help. This one is from a yoga student. You'll have many who partake for different reasons, but also those who are strictly using for the health with the support of health professionals versus those who self-diagnose and treat. The key difference on the surface is marijuana culture. I personally don't identify with marijuana culture, so an event partially based on recreational use that is likely to embody that aspect of the culture would turn me off, as I prefer to take what I describe as a more sincere approach to my usage, bordering in self-treatment for anxiety, etc. I guess to try and bring it to a point, you've got medicinal users and recreational users, and they don't necessarily mingle well. This is from another yoga teacher. I know I'm a rare case, but I am severely allergic. I found out a very sweet, thoughtfully created event. I had seizures for hours after consuming a small amount of CBD. No one else at the event reacted at all. And my doctor said that sometimes people can have reactions like this. Because of this, I'd say it's not a good idea. You just honestly can't know how people will react, and I would assume most yogis won't be medically equipped to handle it. Part of what prompted me to do this episode was an invitation I received to an event in Toronto with a studio I know that was going to partner with a provider who's going to come into the Canadian market as of this October. And this provider, I mean, if anything could appeal to white lady yoga culture, this would be the provider. They're in these disposable vape pens, and there's none of the names that we might find distasteful from stoner culture. Like, I think, is Wowie Maui one of, I think so. Anyway, they all have funny names, but they're not like, oh, funny, cute. They're like, I don't know that I want that and your fluorescent rainbow bears in my Louis Vuitton purse. But in your Louis Vuitton purse, you would want these little vape pens. They're beautifully packaged, clearly on brand for excellent Instagramming. And they never mention any of the names of the strains. Instead, they're just labeled by the effects like calm and sleep. And so this studio is partnering with this producer to create a yoga event. And I tried to get the producer to come on and have a conversation with me about the risks and insurance and precautions of events, but they wouldn't get back to me. So hopefully they do eventually, and I can report back with some of their insider advice. Back to your feedback. This is from a friend who has a very, very practiced meditation practice and is also a doctor. And one of my favorite professors at university always said that if you have PhD or MD behind your name, media will always quote you because they think that you've got a lot of legitimacy. And they're right. So here's from my yogi doctor friend. Seems like somewhat of a procedural oxymoron. Both practices have their positive aspects. However, at least at first glance, they appear counterproductive in combination. I've heard this discussed in the context of medication, and there's evidence of ancient writings, artwork showing yogis and monks engaged in drug use as a means of achieving some peak experience or enlightened state. It's pretty clear that some amazing experiences are possible with a number of psychoactive compounds, and it's also clear that those experiences are temporary and don't become integrated like what can be achieved through regular practice. So probably a fun experience will be had by most, just not likely it will provide any lasting benefit. This is where I personally net out on the issue. I worked so hard to be okay with who I was and how I was, to cultivate an equanimity of internal experience that was pleasurable to be in. And yes, I understand the motivation to have some help feeling elevated. I have made a point of listing the medicinal uses of this drug so that you know that I feel that it is powerful. But yoga and meditation are powerful. For me, the right thing to do is to keep them separate. Another critical thing on my mind is how I want to represent a healthy relationship to mind, body, and spirit for my son Harvey and for other children. There is so much research that shows that smoking marijuana when you are young increases the chances of having addiction to marijuana the older you get. Our brains are not fully finished developing until 25, and drug use influences brain development. While Harvey may end up experimenting with marijuana use, fingers crossed only that, when he is younger than the age of 25, I don't want him to think that it's so acceptable that it's like kombucha or chocolate. We can just throw it on as an adjunct to a yoga practice. I want him to know that yoga and meditation were there for his mother when she needed a way in, not a way out. Michael Stone said that we are concerned with leaving behind a good planet for our kids, but we also need to be concerned about leaving behind good kids for our planet. For me, demonstrating the necessary separation between what might be a responsible occasional use of marijuana or alcohol and a yoga practice is essential. If I were interested in integrating it into my practice, I would do just that. Integrate it into my practice to see what it helps me learn. But like so many of the practices I do, they are not necessarily appropriate for what I teach to my community. There are also lots of people in our communities who are struggling and overcoming addiction. A friend of mine works with the wonderful group She Recovers, which yoga teacher Elena Brower is affiliated with. And this is a little clip of Elena from a Wanderlust speakeasy doing a spoken word poem about her recovery from marijuana addiction.
So the recipe, the ingredients, the how, the way that I've come from then until now is this. Three words. Flip the script. Turn the ship. And when it seems right or justified to have that drink or that puff because, good Lord, I deserve this, don't I? Or this world is not enough like this. I say challenge that thought and think precisely the opposite, just for practice. For example, why on earth, on this day, would I hide or run when I know in my fragile beauty that I am the only one who can evolve this choice I am about to make and be the change and shift my state and turn these generations of escape artists into people who really care about ourselves. I can do that. I say, tell your heart to invade your mind. Do it now. Let it fly. And then turn your brain away from your habit and seek out only the friends who help you locate your magic. And then you get to be a light worker right here on this earth. Show someone else the beauty of their own worth. And just in case you get stuck, and you might if you're real, just put your attention on what you feel and be a witness. And ask in your tiniest voice, what is the sensation prior to the thought that I need this high?
You can catch the rest of that linked off the show notes. It's really worth listening to if you are someone who is habitually using, or you know someone who is habitually using. I appreciate that there is a dramatic difference between habitual use and occasional use. However, we are leaders in a community of seekers, people who are looking for ways out. It is not that you cannot connect with them one-on-one or share with the world on social media or your podcast the benefits that CBD and or THC use has done for you. I know it has done dramatic good for people, and I'm confident that it will do dramatic good, but it will also do dramatic harm, because that is what powerful substances do. I look forward to your feedback. I heard from some of you who grow your own marijuana and use that in your practice. And I heard from people who were outraged that this was going to be a thing. And I think it's a really tricky conversation for us. And I think it's early days. I imagine that we might re-listen to this podcast a year from now, a few years from now, and we'll have a lot more information in place. Since this is uncharted territory, just remember that when you head up the hill, you may win the battle being the first, but as you crest that hill, you're also the easiest target for the other side. Best for all of us to proceed with caution and contemplation and individual practice before we start taking it into any other context. I really look forward to what I imagine will be my first round of enthusiastic and or enthusiastically fiery feedback. Namaste for now, yogis.